Step aside, football. It's time for rugby to take centre stage again. And it does so this weekend with the URC final and the Bulls travelling to Leinster to try and do the unthinkable and claim the trophy. To cover such a subject, the guys welcome ex-Springbok and Bulls winger Akona Ndungani. The most famous of the Ndungani brothers outside of Durban, Akona brings a wealth of expertise to the show both as an ex-player and a rugby pundit. But more importantly, his last two rounds of golf, he's managed to break 80 both times. That is, of course, neither here nor there. But what is episode 52 of the On The Bounce show. It's URC finals time. Let's get into it. Yes, as the AI guy said in the start, football, get to the side. I mean, you can't take the whole year. You have to have some downtime. You know, Europe, FIFA, Nations League, whatever it is, Club World Cup, we're not talking about here on the show. We're going to have a hiatus. And in this hiatus, we are going to be bringing you the best of rugby, starting with today's episode. We've got Akona Ndungani in the studio, as I mentioned earlier. Akona, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to the show, man.
Well, I really wanted you here today because I feel that between Shaz and I, the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, we've done quite a lot on an analytical sort of basis. Like, we've gone through the permutations of who needs to do what to get to a certain stage in the final. But we actually just want an ex-player, a guy that's been there, been through all the sort of like modes of success and team formations to just give us some insights, get us excited about it from like a human level. Because it's finals weekend, right? Yeah. I mean, all the cliches are there for a reason. There's nothing quite like finals rugby.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for every player, this is the time you look forward to. Now it's do or die. And it's the last, taking back to the quarterfinals, it's the last 8 best teams in the competition, moving to semifinals. And I think, you know, all the teams always want to finish either number one or number two because you give yourself a best chance of hosting a semifinal, then hopefully a final. And these are the best 2 teams in the URC currently, you know, Leinster being number one and Bulls being second on the log. And what better way, if the Bulls can pull it off, to go to Ireland and cause an upset against Leinster? Because obviously, I'll say it's an upset because Leinster is, powerhouse. You know, it's a powerhouse, players, quality all around. And, you know, they haven't had the best 3-4 seasons and Champions Cup and URC. Mm. So this one is a must win for them. But also the Bulls have played in finals where they've hosted one at home, played away against the Stormers and haven't won. Mm. So both teams are desperate for a win. So it should be a very exciting game to watch.
Damn right. I mean, it is. They've arsenaled it a little bit, have Leinster.
Let's just call it what it is. They've been choking the whole time.
They have done a bit. So we're going to get heavy into this on the show today. Obviously, look at the two teams in focus, but also just to kind of catch up a bit on the URC as a tournament. You know, like it has been, we'll get into the history after the break, of course, but the tournament's been around for quite a while now. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger and better. So we also want to take the time this episode to kind of cover all of that. So catch us after the break because we're also going to throw in the whole box squad and where it is currently into the mix too. Great rugby show, episode 52. Thanks for joining us. Catch you after the break.
So
5-4-3-2-1. Do we normally get that?
Yeah, we never get a 5-4-3-2-1. Shout out.
Big stuff here. All right. So welcome back. Big rugby episode. I'm hugely excited about that. And of course, I'm wearing my Vierpierre today, which to my guests, absolute disdain.
Wrong episode.
As he saw that walking in. Yeah. Right. We do have a Bulls legend in the studio this week, as I've said. But let's kick off with the URC as a tournament. You know, it is a very recent thing, but the origins of which have gone back to the late 90s. So I did a bit of digging because I like to, you know, preface these things.
Oh, you love the history lesson?
I do. I'm an absolute sports geek. You're not going to fight that with me. So back in 1999, the Scottish and the Welsh teams came together and they were playing around a little bit. And then they added some Irish teams that became the Celtic League, whatever it was. And then slowly but surely, they were like, okay, we need to make this thing a little bit bigger. Then some Italians joined and it became this Pro 12 thing. Then it became the Pro 14, and that was the first time South African teams came into that. That was 2017. So basically, we were still in Super Rugby back then. So the SA teams that didn't make into Super Rugby, then they played in this Pro 14, which then became like this Rainbow Cup, something Guinness Cup. It gets a bit murky.
That can see it's going a dark path now.
But by 2021, we had the United Rugby Championship as we know it now. Aquana alluded to it in the intro that the Stormers won the first one. They beat the Bulls in the final. The Stormers then host the next one as well. They lost to Munster. Mm. And then Glasgow somehow came to Loftus last year. They won the trophy. I was there. It was really, really quite sobering. And then here we are now, Leinster versus the Bulls this weekend for the final. So, according to the two teams, rightfully the two best teams in this tournament. Yeah. When we started getting into the URC, we started getting more into European rugby, people were always telling us that Leinster are the best team. And then we haven't really seen the trophies to kind of warrant that. But what is it about these Oaks, other than the obvious thing that they've got so many capped Irish internationals, make Leinster so vaunted, I think is a word we can use for them.
Can we agree on first thing? Before we get to that.
Okay, let's go.
This is going to be Bulls related.
Next time I see you, there's definitely a fight on the table because, as you mentioned earlier, you deciding to wear your Western Province jersey today after I agreed to come on the show is sort of an insult.
It's crazy.
Because Western Province is our worst enemy.
And also and not you should in the know final. That. And also not in the final. No, I agree.
You happy? Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm happy. You make us look crazy.
As moments go in the studio, this is probably the least professional I've maybe had.
Because obviously you want your guests to feel comfortable and feel they're part of the show.
Yeah, Ben, this one.
Like now you're just putting it in my face. And
I feel like there's extra lights on me now. And there's actually quite a lot of lights to start with. Agreed.
Okay, as long as we're
happy with that. I'm with you on the fine.
Yeah, so going back to the URC, and I think... You know, Leinster is by far the best team in Ireland. And by far, I think purely because they've managed to put up a squad where they've got obviously the international players that sort of feature in the Champions Cup mostly. And we don't see them playing in the URC. We see them playing in some of the games. But I think the academy side that they have, the players, you know, all want to play for Leinster because of what they have in their squad. As a youngster, you want to be training with Gibson Park. You want to have Robbie Henshaw, Ringrose, those players in the same training ground because you can learn so much from them. Mm. And also, it's also important for the coach, which is Leo Cullen, to have a balance. You know, you must still have players that are still hungry to play for you, absolutely, even though that they know that I'll play a couple of games, but I won't feature in the semis or the final. Yeah. But he's managed to find a balance where the players still feature and there's also injuries as well. But unfortunately, like we spoke about it earlier, they haven't gone over the line. You know, lost to La Rochelle in the Champions Cup, lost to Munster in the semifinals, lost to the Bulls in the semifinals, lost to Bulls again at Loftus again. So I think... I don't want to say it's sort of like the chokers of the tournament, but if you think about it, they are. You know, they do so well. They go throughout the season having lost three games, which is very good for a team, you know. And for me, you know, I spoke about it with other mates of mine that, you know, teams, obviously, if you're on top of the table, they always look at you and see how they can beat you.
Yeah.
And what I've realized with Leinster, same as Ireland, they only have sort of one game plan. And once that doesn't work, they can't do anything else. Mm. And if you look at the teams that have beaten them, especially in Ireland, they've matched them physically, stopped the game line, slow the ball down because they want to play quick ball because they have beautiful runners. They know how to, you know, manipulate defenses and all of those things. But unfortunately, if teams have managed to stifle them from possession, then they seem to struggle. And obviously the pressure of always being expected to win and then you don't actually go out and win plays a big role. And, you know, it's now they've got another chance, you know, to play the final at home. And, you know, they have the players, they've managed to sign international players, you know, Archias Neyman, who's one of the best locks we've had in this country. Jody Barrett is there as well. And I think that was also to find the balance when the international players are not there, but those guys can still help the sort of youngsters coming through.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, as you said, like the Gary Ringrose, Jefferson Gibson Park thing, and you're adding Arkeus Neyman, they're adding someone like Jordy Barrett as well. Then you've got South African, New Zealand. Like, there's a lot of influence there as well.
Yes.
That'll definitely help. With
also, Jacques Nindaba is also in the coach's box. So that also makes a big difference. And, you know, we've read some clips from Ireland saying that Jacques is the problem. That's why Leinster's not doing well. And, you know, I think the guys just hate South Africans. You know, they've seen what Jacques did with the box.
Yeah.
So now, unfortunately,
why can't you do it here?
Yeah.
I think for me, what's going to be very important about Leinster going into this final is that it's going to be kind of a legacy-defying type of final, because we use words like the best in the tournament.
Yes.
I think they're just the most consistent.
Clear favorites.
Clear favorites.
Yeah, but I mean, this is
actually... Let's choke again. I'm over this conversation about Leinster being this, you know, this juggernaut in...
Which is fair. But I mean, I think the reason why I wanted to bring up the whole squad thing is that does someone like Leinster have a huge budget compared to the Bulls? I mean, how big is it in comparison? Because, I mean, we can say all we want about Leinster being great and all this kind of stuff. Yes. Is it because they've got an unfair financial advantage, which will always be a reality?
It is. Obviously, the clubs from up north, you know, the exchange rate and everything else, their budget is much bigger. If you look at the clubs like Toulouse, the guys from France, they can buy players as much as they want.
But now in the URC, is there budget caps? I mean, I'm only going to ask someone like you this. We're not going to fixate over these things. Is that how it is?
So basically, in SA, we have a cap that you can't sign players for. I think it's 50 million plus or some and a number like around there. And obviously in other Ireland, Scotland and Wales. But what the Irish teams have done is they've put most of their resources to Leinster and Munster. And then Connacht and Ulster. So those top three, Munster, Ulster, and Leinster, are the teams that they focus more on. Mm-hmm. And then Connacht is sort of like the feeder team to those teams. But obviously, with Leinster having so many internationals, they sort of focus more on them. So their budget is much better. And I think, you know, you can speak to Johan van Graan, who was at Munster. He was always crying about that Leinster gets everything, but Munster doesn't get as much as what Leinster does. You know, so, and if you look now, when he went to Bath, he was given an open checkbook and he won the Challenge Cup. Now he's going to hopefully win the Gallagher Premiership. So budget makes a big difference, you know. And fortunately, I think if you look at the Sharks and the Bulls in SA, yes, they've got the money and they can sign quality players. And that's why I think for me, those are the best two teams we have in the country currently.
Well, they are, along with the Stormers.
I mean, don't try run it.
I think yes, Stormers.
Stormers have a trophy in this tournament. normally you can give me crap about my teams not having trophies.
I'm just keep quiet on this one. We hosted and I think, what I was saying.
You know, Stormers, if you look at how their season went this year, didn't have a good start. And it's purely because I think you guys rely on your three star players in the back line, Manili Bok, Sasha Feinberg, and Damon Willemsen. You can see in the quarterfinals as well, when Damon was not there, you guys sort of struggled to get into the game and get the dominance.
I'm not going to go on any Stormers hate. You know me and my Manili Bok hate.
Yes.
So we're not going to get into that rot today.
Okay, look, I want to bring it back. It's just that, again, with the salary caps, is there a universal European one, or is it dictated per thing? Like, is our salary cap different to the in monetary terms?
Yes. So it's determined per country.
But that seems stupid, though, because
we're playing in the same tournament,
so we have a universal salary cap.
But then again, so I think for me, there shouldn't be a salary cap, right? If you have the money to buy the best players, go for it. Because now it limits teams from buying players and everything else. But I think rules are there.
It just seems like a weird sort of double standard.
We're
25-1 against the pound, and now we're being salary capped on top of that.
Can you imagine?
You can have the best weather in Durban and the hottest woman in Cape Town.
Yes.
You need other incentives to get players to a place.
Exactly.
You actually want to have a career at a place.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's going to be interesting with this, because there's been a slight change in terms of Leinster's global approach to rugby. So I want to see it in this final, with them getting all these international players, have they adjusted their system to, like what you were saying, when we get into a sticky situation, can these people with different methodologies carry out a new strategy to get over the Bulls? Because we know what Blue Bulls rugby is like.
Yeah, look, another point that we've got to bring in with internationals is that is this still a rule that if you want to play for Ireland, you have to play in Ireland? Is that very much hard and fast?
Ireland, yes. New Zealand, yes. England, yes.
England, yeah. So the moment an English player goes to go play for a French club, you're not putting on the white jersey.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's, look, I mean, I think it's good to bring this kind of stuff up because we go through the tournaments each and every year and go, that team's so good.
Yes.
But like, I'm not looking for excuses why the Bulls are underdogs here slash maybe not win this one. But it's good perspective going into this final that our guys are going to be traveling. We've got some key injuries to the Bulls team. That lends the team, they can play on both fronts, the cup and the whole league thing. Yep. And it just needs to be sort of prefaced, I think, in that. But with that, like, what's been your take on the Bulls this season as far as they were in the final last year at home? They should have won. They absolutely bottled that game. I remember watching it.
We were shocked.
Made you smile.
It felt very vivid for me for some reason. I think maybe because I was on the cusp of becoming a Bulls fan. But this year, again, it was a bit stuttery. It wasn't like the kind of clinical thing. And then they'll give a team like 50 points at Loftus like they've been known to do. What's been your take as far as where this team is at currently? I mean, is it on an upward trajectory? Have they hit sort of like a peak and they now need to realize it? Or like where in your mind is it?
Well, if you look at the semifinals, you know, that game, they played very well. Against a very strong Sharks team, dominated them in the scrums. Yes, you can talk about, for me, it was painful to watch the final last year, you know, being there as the favorites after a very good semifinal against Leinster at home.
Very.
And I think sometimes we've seen that against in 2019 where England beat New Zealand in the semifinal, where they played out of their socks and in the final were nowhere. So I think sometimes teams seem to just play the final before the final.
Yeah.
And we felt that Glasgow should be a walk in the park.
Yeah.
And also I think losing Vili in that final was a big blow for the Bulls.
That was key for the orchestrating of that backline.
Yes, because he seems to play so well with Ross in there. And unfortunately, I think, you know, we talk about having options and other plans when one doesn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, Franco Smith, we have to give him credit for, you know, he realized that you have to double hit the Bulls. And unfortunately, you know, our forwards just seem to just have one-off runners and Leinster just, I mean, Glasgow had answers for that. You know, they slowed the ball down and were just getting up and making the tackles. And then once they realized that the Bulls are not getting the momentum that they wanted and the crowd is becoming quiet, then you could see their shoulders opening up and feeling that they can actually win this game. And that's how, you know, they managed to win the game. And I think, you know, Bulls would have learned from that. You need to be able to see what is on the table and be able to, you know, make changes and play according to what's in front of you. And yes, the season, I think, has been very good from the Bulls. Obviously, you always want to finish first, but I think if you don't win some games at home, you know, that will sort of slow down your momentum on finishing on top of the log. But I think, you know, they now on 8 winning streak for the first time in the URC.
Yep.
And that's a time you want to peak, you know, going to the finals. And that will give them a lot of confidence. And the way they dominated the Bok front row, you know, going against the Irish powerhouse as well.
In fairness, though, the Sharks didn't have their locks.
Yeah, but I think you can say that, right? Yes, Eben was a big loss for them.
100%. But Jenkins also has some tall, some big, burly numbers in the back there.
Yeah, so now if you the Bulls player and you look at that Sharks pack, you know, Ox, Bongi, Vincent, Sia, Vincent, Chitukwa, then you like, this is the double winning World Cup Springboks. And we push them back in the scrum. We stop their lineup moles. That will give you a lot of confidence. Yes, Eben was not there, but you still, you know, dominated that forward pack. So I think, you know, yes, names makes a big difference. And it will give them a huge boost because they know that this weekend will be the same. You know, Irish front row, Achie, Alok, you know, loose forwards as well. So they've got a very tough challenge. But I think what will work for them as well, you know, knowing Jake, he will take them back to when they beat Leinster in Ireland 29, two seasons ago.
22.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, just coming off, you know, the semi-final, you can see a Jake White team as well oiled. a team culture. And like, you know, my biggest criticism of the Sharks is a lot of experience.
Yeah.
But sometimes it feels like there is no cohesiveness in terms of the system. Yes. Big names giving me Man City vibes. But
I don't think John Plumtree's actually the right
one. Yeah, you
know. No, it's not.
I've been saying it for a couple of seasons.
And no, you see not. a Bulls team who are going to fight for each other.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that is going to be one of the biggest things I'm going to watch for going into a final, where you've got two big juggernauts. Where is it going to be one? It's going to be one with our various X factors on, and you know, and I think the Bulls have got something that they will throw in there.
They do. They absolutely do. But according, getting back to from like, when you're in these camps, right, in these situations, again, going to the finals, going to these sort of big games, all the cliches and that kind of stuff aside, what does a week look like? Okay, so you've had your game.
Yeah.
Sunday's obviously you're recouping, yes, counting your losses, yes, average after battle sort of thing. Yes. You've now got to fly quite far because, yes, Ireland's not exactly around the corner.
100%.
Okay, and now you've got to do everything because a preparation for match day Saturday is a long, arduous process and various things have to be ticked off.
Yes.
Travel is an absolute waste of time,
yes,
and it puts you back a little bit. So what does a week look like for a player going into this? Because you can have all the best theories in the world, and Jake obviously has to now manage all this kind of stuff, yeah, and all those things that you mentioned there. Yeah. But how do you get to match day knowing you're going to be the best of who you're going to be? How much different is a finals week like this?
Well, there's not much training you can do now in this week. And I think the upside of it as well is if you finish second and Glasgow and Leinster played before your game, so before even playing, you know exactly that whoever wins is flying to Ireland. So mentally already, the players have adjusted to that. And obviously, you know, the performance that the Bulls put up on Saturday showed that they were focused on beating the Sharks at home and then worry about what's coming after that. And, you know, then Sunday you talk about, you know, now you're recovering, you getting ready to fly out to Ireland. And I think the beauty about sport now, I think the amount of planning that goes behind the scenes beforehand, you know exactly how many days you're going to, you know, train and video analysis and trying to see how you can win the final as best as possible. The guys already, their bodies, obviously they saw from the Saturday game. Now you try and recover and make them fresh as much as possible. And I think for coaches, they'll always say that let's not think about the game on a Monday or Tuesday. Now we're trying to plan and how to improve. We look at what we did right, what we didn't do right, and then we try and focus on those things. Then you can start worrying about the game closer to the time because it can actually make you tired if you think about it on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, and then have a day off where the guys just completely switch off, go sightseeing, play golf, or try and do whatever it's going to make you switch off completely. Then you reset again, like on a Thursday, and then captains run on a Friday.
So you're saying is like these guys might not even touch any sort of contact or ball or field.
Well, ball they will. You know, line out, plays, everything else.
Okay.
You can't do like deep contact now. It just can't because it's the end of the season for them. And you don't want to sort of get in any injury that you don't want. Because, you know, you might say, okay, go 50%, but players are players. Once that
touch happens.
Yes, yeah. You can't go 50%. You want to go 100%. Yeah. So coaches will be very wary of that and have to manage their players. Now it's just all about management and making sure that your players are fresh and ready because now you've got a very tough game coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, I wanted to ask because you've been through this journey quite a bit. How do you try to keep your atmosphere loose? Because once you get too focused, as you've said, into a final, and some players get, especially the young guys, get to become tense. They don't play how they would usually play. So how do we, you know, as senior guys, keep the environment a bit loose, like it's just another rugby game, as people say, even though it's not?
Yes.
But how did you guys go through that process?
Well, it's all about the type of players you have in your team. Yeah. You have jokers, you have guys that are relaxed by nature, and then you have guys that are focused. They like to take themselves too seriously. And I think also the senior players will help in that. You know, your Harold Foster, your Marcel Coetzee, Juan José Villileroux that have been there, they've done the job. And to just make sure that, you know, the youngsters don't get too excited and, you know, just get out of hand. And I think for me, what also works is that, you know, you need to have sort of like create an environment where the guys can just relax.
Yeah.
When you switch on, you switch on. Yeah. But when you switch off completely, switch off, go for coffee, go for drinks, go play golf, play PlayStation. I know the guys love playing PlayStation now. Yeah. So just try and find a balance where not one is more than the other, because that's where you can actually lose it. And then when you guys get on the field, you focus, you know, because it's a final, you know. And like I said, the Bulls haven't won the URC. And I think for Jake's legacy, where he's built a squad as well, where we're seeing guys from the Bulls being called up for the Springboks, you don't want to, having been to three finals and not have won one.
Yeah.
And that will always stay with him. You know, he's won around the world. And I think this is the one that he wants the most.
And like, how, again, like how any given Sunday does it become now with like the sort of G-ing the guys up? Because as you, like, these are professionals, right? You've got experienced guys, you've got the young guys, everyone's kind of keen. I mean, like, what would you know of Jake in this respect? Like, is this where you got to go all in and you're asking everyone for that next inch? Like, how motivated and how amped up do the guys get in the sort of team speeches with this?
Yeah, they do. And, you know, Jake has been around. You know, he was there 2007 in France, won the World Cup. And I think, you know, back then he was still sort of young in his coaching career. And, you know, the guys played golf the semifinal of the week of the semifinal. And he wanted to, and we won the semifinal. And he wanted to change that in the final. You know, he spoke to John, who was the captain, and Victor, the senior players, that, you know, players shouldn't go play golf because I think he was worried that the focus won't be there. But, you know, John being himself is like, no, we can't change what works. And guys need to relax and just completely switch off. And I think you learn from those things as a coach. And, you know, he's been around. He knows exactly what he needs to say to his players. And I think for players, you don't need that much motivation from the coach. You have your own motivation yourself because you also want to win the trophy. And there's nothing better than going to Ireland and beating Leinster at home.
Yeah.
You know, that's one that you always remember because of the quality of the players that they have. And I think, you know, the pressure is more now on Leinster than it is on the Bulls because obviously playing at home, your family's there, the fans are there for you. Everyone expects you to win. But when you play away from home, you're the underdog. And Jake knows that. The players know that. And for them, that's a big drive.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go out there and show that you can actually do this. You've done it before, but in the semifinal, now it's the one that counts. Yeah. If you do your basics right, you win the game, your discipline is good, 100%. You get to lift the trophy in Ireland. That is special.
You know, when you were obviously playing with the Bulls, Loftus is a very unique place. Mm. It's very unique in the fact it's high altitude.
Yes.
It's dry in the predominantly rugby season. Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
To go to like a sea level kind of place at any stage of the different season, to go to places kind of colder, I mean, does this have any bearing on a professional player nowadays?
In a way, it will. Because obviously, if you go to Ireland and it's that driving wind, it's raining, it's cold, it's not something that you're used to. Mm. But I think, you know, the beauty about the URC now, the guys have experienced that. You know, when we first started joining the URC, we spoke about the 3G pitch and how much it was struggling for the players to adjust to it, the way that the refs were blowing the game. It was something that's different from us, obviously, from Super Rugby days, and it took some adjustment. But I think the beauty about it now, we are 4 or 5 seasons in, so we know exactly what we expect. We know exactly how the refs blow the game. And, you know, Croke Park is a stadium where I think the guys have played before, so they know the conditions there. They would prepare well for them. And being there the whole week, you sort of adjust to the conditions and adjust to, you know, just the way that you guys are training. You know, they coming from Pretoria, it's cold now, but, you know, it's
just freezing.
Yeah. Today is freezing, but I think, you know, the players will adjust. It shouldn't be that much of an effect anymore.
Mm. Look, I'm not going to put you in the spots here and say, right, who's going to win whatever, because it's still early in the week for us here.
Yeah.
The United Rugby Championship as a tournament, we're now into the fourth full season to think about it.
We're in it now.
In your mind, is it a great tournament, and is Super Rugby a distant memory for you? Or do you, because you've come from that era and you've seen both really, and now you're seeing it as a pundit, you're seeing it quite critically where we are now. Mm. Does Super Rugby feel like a long time ago, or is there still parts of it you hanker for as both a fan and knowing what players
go through? You know, I enjoyed Super Rugby because I played in it. Yeah. And, you know, that's when, you know, the Crusaders, the Blues were at their peak. And you always wanted to, you know, perform well against those teams, going to Christchurch and beating Crusaders or Eden Park. But I think, you know, you sort of adjust with the times. And you can see who's at a loss now, you know, with New Zealand not being as dominant as they used to be because obviously they miss the South African teams. And, you know, it was always a challenge, is always scary and you never know what to expect. Yeah. But I think with the URC, the growth that we've seen from it, numbers are just growing every year. People are starting to get excited about it. And obviously it will take time for our supporters to understand the players from Italy and Wales and Scotland, like they did with New Zealand and Australia. But eventually, I think people will start to enjoy it. And when we see teams like Glasgow playing so well and coming to Loftus to beat the Bulls, you know, I think people will start to adjust to it. And I think obviously the change was a bit confusing from the spectator's point of view.
Sure.
Because you've got the Challenge Cup, you've got the Champions Cup, you've got the URC. I
struggled.
Like, people don't understand who's who and how do they fit in.
Well, there was the whole COVID mess where it was like local derbies for basically
exactly.
two teams.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think now people are starting to find their feet in the tournament and starting to enjoy it. And
yeah.
I think having South African teams doing so well also makes a big difference. 100%. Having three SA teams in the quarterfinals, semis, and now the final will bring that excitement to this. The fans.
100%
agree.
Do you have, I mean, we had a show a few weeks back, we spoke about potential of a global season.
Yeah.
And I know from your perspective as a conversation you've probably been involved with, is there in your mind like an ideal solution here that we can have more of a global season? Maybe the cups can get more emphasis, more defined player rest periods, maybe more aligned with how the Northern Hemisphere do it. Is there something in your mind that you feel quite passionately about in that?
Well, I think there's lots of talks about it.
Yeah.
And now there's talks about this club World Cup sort of a tournament. And it's exciting. And I think, you know, fans want to see the best players compete against each other. That's what they want to see. And so for me, if you look at the Champions Cup, you know, I enjoy it because now you get to see the best from France, you get to see the best from England, South Africa and Ireland competing at that level. You know, you look at the game that was played in Durban where Toulouse brought their French stars to play against the Sharks. Yeah. So it's like the South African Springboks playing against France. And I think those are the types of games that fans want to see.
Absolutely.
You know? And you could see how much the fans enjoyed seeing DuPont there, Ramos and all of those type of players because they've seen them in World Cups playing for their countries. Now they get to see them playing for their clubs. So I think, you know, the hunger is there from the fans and eventually, I think, but the problem is finding time for it because the season is so long. Yeah. You know, the guys are finishing now, going to international window and now the Currie Cup is starting and it's just to find balance where you get the best out of your players. You know, you get players to rest as well and still have the competition at the level where fans will want to buy tickets to go watch at the stadiums.
See, like, I always think about these things as the URC, in my mind, is a great tournament. Super Rugby in its own right, it's great because of what they're doing. Because I think finally the South Pacific Islanders are getting a lot of recognition they didn't get in the past.
100%,
the players just went to other teams and that was it.
Yes.
Now their teams are there. Yeah. So I'm almost hesitant to think that a global season is even possible because it's quite cool what they got going in their regions. But what I would love to see, what I absolutely love to see is like a Super Rugby champion versus URC champion.
Yes.
You know, like the UEFA Super Cup that they wants to watch.
That's
a good idea. I never thought about that. Yeah.
But like, and especially do it in a British and Irish Lions rugby year because you've already got guys touring and traveling because that would be a sweet way to end a sort of like run like this.
But you know they're going to complain about too much rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, look, that's the genie's already out of that bucket anyway.
Yeah, okay.
It would be so cool to see that match, though. Super Rugby versus URC.
The ultimate champion.
And to that, who do you think would win?
Oh, Leinster beating the brakes of whoever. Oh, the Bulls.
So Leinster.
Or the Bulls.
Leinster or Bulls versus, sorry, pardon my ignorance, who won Super Rugby this year?
Well, it's the final is this weekend.
So, exactly. It runs concurrently.
Yep. Yes, yeah.
Probably Blues or someone.
So the Blues are looking good. Crusaders didn't have a good season. Brumbies are up there and about. I think, obviously, the Leinster, the Bulls, the Sharks, yeah. I think they would have a very good chance of winning that. And to your point, you know, for me, I think I read where they were talking about, you know, having four teams from Super Rugby against URC and top 14 and the Champions Cup. And that will be like sort of like the club World Cup.
Yeah.
And there is talks that it, in the next 2-3 years, it might happen, which would be, I think, one of the best things to ever happen.
What it always comes back to is that rugby is behind football. It always will be, okay? Yeah. Yeah. Just look at how professionalism has always gone.
Mm.
And I know geographically it's harder because most of football happens in Europe.
Yes.
2-hour flights and all.
Yeah.
It's
easy.
Easy.
Yeah.
But this is where we're going, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
And I'm a massive rugby purist, as you can tell from my jersey. But I, the sport has to go this way.
It just simply has to go this way.
Globalization of rugby, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's also how you create bigger stakes, right? Yes. Because you got to keep ratcheting up a little bit.
Yes.
I love URC, but I'm going to always want a bit more.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to want more from these cup competitions.
Yes.
But still, I mean, I think it's just damn exciting. I think this tournament's been a great example of our migration to the north working.
Mm.
You know, and I think we've had a long enough time period now that we can see the roots of this thing now take.
Yeah.
And it really is cool to see.
And I think the nice thing about it as well, we don't have those games where we have to wake up like in the morning to watch
That's what I was going to say.
Time difference. So I think this works much better for 100%. Us.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. Yeah. So, yeah, Saturday, as you know, that'll be the URC final. Leinster are going to
Please
be the huge favourites.
Put some excitement in your face when you say that.
I'm building into it.
I'm building into it.
You know, and yes, the Bulls are massive underdogs, but like what you were saying there, I'm taking my own deductions out of this here. Yeah. As a player, you know, you don't have that sort of mental stress. Those Leinster guys, after beating Glasgow on Saturday, they've gone back home. They've looked at their phones. They've got aunties, uncles, friends, cousins, whatever, saying, we'll see you at Croke Park. I'll wait till you guys win. They're sitting on this favorites tag for the whole week now.
Yeah.
It must be a heavy burden. The Bulls Oaks are going to be like Oaks on tour. I just went on a tour with some friends. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be that aspect for guys. So as much as they are the underdogs and they're playing away and all that kind of stuff, I'm super actually like positive for the Bulls. I really am. It does suck that Cameron Hunnicorn is not going to be there.
Mm.
That's a major blow for me because I think you spoke about key players like in the senior aspect getting things together.
Yes.
Key players in the Spark perspective.
Yes.
Thaddeus is just, he's a powerhouse.
Yeah.
He's got youth. Yes. He's got youth. He's fearless. He's good. He's versatile. That's a player you want in the final. So
you do want those players. I think even for players, when you look around in the changing room, you see Cameron Hunnicorn playing, you know, that makes you lift your game as well.
Yep.
So it will be a big loss for them because he's been amazing this season.
Well, it's been a massive, massive loss because Ulrich Lowe also.
Yes.
So between those two guys, I mean, that is your next generation of Bulls superstar loose forward.
Uh-huh.
Not going to be there. Uh-huh. They've got experience.
Yeah.
But look, I think we should wrap up this little section here by just alluding to Rusty's initial box squad for the season.
Uh-huh.
So, Wendy, you've got some slides there. It's a 51-man squad, I think it is. My mass is okay. 55-man squad now.
Yeah.
So in the backs, I mean, look, the question I wanted to ask you is that in an extended squad like this, I'm not going to run through all the names. You can see it on the screen here. There's a lot. Okay? Yeah, we start off with 24 backs. What actually really happens in this squad? You've got to start from somewhere.
Yeah.
And these guys have actually converged this week, Monday.
Yes.
Obviously, there's going to be a delay with other guys carrying back from other sort of things.
Yes.
But like, what happens in these kind of squads? We've got 55 players. Show us the forwards there, Wendy. So, Evan Roos has come in here because Cameron Hunnicorn's injury.
Mm.
I mean, I love how Rassie's just basically gone, every forward I like, that's South African, he's here.
I'm putting it there.
He's pulling them all in here.
Yeah.
It's great to see Lute Yaga back. Joanna Augustus.
Good to see him.
I've always liked him, even though he went to Northampton. We've got, amazing players. That's not the point of me bringing these slides up. What really happens? We've got 55 players coming together here. We know what the season's going to look like.
Yeah.
We know we're whittling down the numbers big time.
Yeah.
How do these initial sort of squads work? Like, what is the major purpose of them?
Well, I think for Rassi is you never know what he thinks.
Also
true. We always think we know which way he's going to go, but he just seems to go. And I think that's the whole world. That's why everyone doesn't like him.
Yeah.
But I think he sort of has his eye to Australia 27. And you can see by the squad that he brought together, you know. Having a guy, Makaza, who won the Varsity Cup.
Yeah, he went to Army Boys, my school.
And who's in the Springboks. So imagine for him.
Yeah.
You know, I loved watching him when he played for UCT, and the way he, you know, he is a sharpshooter of note. He doesn't miss anything for post. But he's a ball player as well, you know, with ball in hand. And for him to be there amongst Cheslin Kolbe, Kurt Lee, Mapimpi, I think is going to be
in the same kit, in the same sessions.
You see, yeah. And I think that's what Russ is trying to drive there. And, you know, Jean-Luc Dupree is back in the squad. So he's brought in a team where, obviously, we've got the Barbers first, and then we've got two Italy games and Georgia. So he knows exactly who's going to play where and how many minutes they're going to get, and trying to see what he can get from those players, because he knows that going past these four first games of the season, going to the Champions Cup, through the
Rugby Championships,
you need to find players that will go to New Zealand and hopefully win both games in New Zealand. And he knows sort of like which team he's going to go with there. And I think with him, he knows that the team that has won the World Cups in 19 and 23 are actually getting to a point where now they're going to have to start looking at retirement.
Yeah, I was going to say the interesting part about the squad selection is that there's a lot of old World Cup winners, but yes, we're going to start transitioning them out.
Yes.
I know we rode to Vili.
Yes.
We're trying to get Vili over the hill.
That's a short interest story. But I'm glad you bring this up, because the first thing I looked at when I looked at that squad, it's like, it's almost like this is the pressure cooker for those guys who were the incumbents.
Yep. Yes.
Everything about this says we've got our next generations here.
Yes.
So it's a big squad. Read the names that are going to be your reality now.
Yes.
And that's where we are, which is quite sobering, really. I mean,
yeah,
if you're you're only as good as your last game, as the saying goes, and as you do get on, it's a young man's sport.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned earlier about the Bulls' dominance in the scrum.
Mm.
That already, to me, says that
there's a transition coming.
Like, there isn't a starting box front row right now. Mm. It's very much up in the air.
Yeah, and I think even for how exciting we've been in the backs, I think Manny Lubok's position is very much in question. I want to get
at this stage. I think you must just have a sign.
You've got someone like Andre Pollard who's back, and we know he's going to kick for post, and then you got Sasha now in.
Yeah.
Where does Manny Lubok fit into the system again?
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how we transition moving forward in terms of the Springbok squad, because I think this is the time to bring in the young guys and really give them their run, because if we're looking to 27, we probably have to retire some guys now.
Well, if you're looking at 27, you don't look at 27 and 27.
Yeah.
You look at 27 and 25,
yes,
which is kind of where it is.
Yeah. Yes. So it's going to be interesting.
But I think from looking at how Rossi has done it ever since he took over, he's managed to put together a group of players that can compete and win games.
Yeah.
He's able to make 12, 13 changes and still win.
Yeah.
And I think it's the culture that he's brought back to the jersey. It's the understanding. And what I like about what he's done is, you know, sometimes you get players that start this weekend and then next weekend you're not starting.
Yeah.
And he's built relationships amongst the players where they're still competing for the same jersey, but they understand it's for the country first.
Yeah.
You know, look at Jesse Creel and Lukanyo Am. You know, Lukanyo was the number 113 and then injuries happened to him and then Jesse took over. But you can still see how they still talk to each other and how they help each other during training and everything else. And I think that's a beauty about what Russ has done to this team. They know that it's not about me, it's about the jersey first.
I wanted to ask you, because obviously this is basically like glorified trials, and there is always going to be competition for spots.
Yes.
So you've got somebody, and you mentioned it, because I have got, it's going to be interesting to see how Lukanyo comes off and deals with Jesse Creel.
According to X last weekend, that was his last game Lacanya am.
Because
after losing to the Bulls.
Yeah. Look, he had a look, I will not hide it. He dropped a lot of balls there. And ever since Jesse Creel's taken that spot, I wonder what happens in those camps where you have to have that competitive edge switched on, because he wants his spot back. He's been IRB player twice, but it doesn't look like he can walk into that room anymore.
Yes.
Because they've got real, you know, competition for that spot. And right now Jesse Creel deserves that spot.
It does.
So when you get into those camps, is it a proving session as well? As much as you bring the camaraderie, how competitive is it there now in those trenches?
It's huge. And I think that's what Rossi has given the players. You know, compete, be number one, show me that you want this jersey back. And also, there's no guarantee. Like, even Sia might not even start, you know? So, and he understands that. And you look at the World Cup, how close the games were. You look at the one against
all of them.
There's one, I think it was the semifinals.
France.
Semifinals. You know, we were under the pump against England.
Yeah.
And then Rossi takes off 3-4 senior players. Yeah. And he brings in Archie, youngsters to come and finish the game. And a lot of coaches would never do that because they don't believe that their bench can come and make an impact. You will keep Sia, you'll keep Eben, you'll keep Kitsi, make sure that they go out and win the game. But for them, they understand if you don't do what we ask you to do, then there's nothing else. We're going to pull you off. We trust the guys on the bench to come through and, you know, and win the game for us. And that's what happened. And I think it's just the mindset that he's created, you know, the belief that if you're there in that 23-man squad, you can win the game for us. And it just starts from those alignment camps and how we just builds that trust in the players, how the players trust the system, they trust the coach. They know exactly what's expected from them. And they always talk about let the main thing remain the main thing. And I think that's South Africa for them.
100%. And then from a technical standpoint, I mean, I could ask you many, many questions about this, but we're not going to go much further. But like from a technical standpoint, like what are the sessions and how deep do the sessions go? Because as you mentioned, like there's guys that haven't been in this mix at all. You've got a guy coming from a Varsity Cup setup to a guy that's played over 100 times for the Springboks.
Yeah.
How in depth are the sessions? I mean, are they quite tactically based, or is it more about just trying to find, I don't know, combinations in certain positions?
Yeah, they're a bit of both. Eh? If you're coming in, you have to pick up, you have to do extras, you have to learn exactly how the team plays, what the culture is, what is expected from you, what is not expected from you.
Did you get like a starter pack when you rock up there?
Well, you get a talking to. And I think for a youngster, you have to see who's the senior players. Try and bring yourself closer to that guy and try and understand what Springbok culture is about. How do you handle yourself in games? How do you handle the pressure? And I think that's if you look at the squad, you know, Vili is going to get his 100th cap. Eben is there. And the amount of caps that they have in that team, there's a lot of experienced players. And I think what's important is we've seen how the Springboks have changed and grown with time, because obviously they're the world champions and everyone is gunning for them. They know that if we, from a line out, we've got Damien Dialinda taking the ball up. Yeah. Now they change it to Jesse Creel. You know, so it's those small changes that we've seen that seem to work. You know, against France, we know that they like to kick long. So we put Chesney and Kirtley to bring the ball up. We're not going to kick it back to them. Yeah. So make those forwards run. From a up and under, we make a mark and we call a scrum. So those innovations, that coaching stuff, it just keeps to change and it keeps teams on their toes. And I think that's the beauty about this team. You know, you look at the Sharks, 11 Springboks, but you don't see that on the field. But when the guys move from Durban to the Springbok camp, they seem to just play at a different level.
Yeah. Look, I would love to have a behind-the-scenes sort of breakdown about what these camps are about, because those are quite lengthy as well. You get together. And it's also just a way of signaling, like, this is now the rest of your year. Mm. You've had your time with your club, your province, whatever it may be. You're now a Springbok.
Yeah.
And it must be cool because, like, as a rugby fan, I know I speak on behalf of many here. The season's about to get a whole lot more real. It's a lot more exciting. Yep. And it's like these moments that get me so excited because it just means so much to these players.
It does. And I think, you know, what is beautiful about it is what the Springbok brand stands for now.
100%.
You know, every South African feels that team belongs to them. And that's all thanks to Rassie, because what he's done is changed the mindset of those players. And you can see the excitement in the country when the Springboks are playing.
Yeah.
Tickets come out, sold out within minutes.
Yep.
And that's what you want from your national side. And I think for players, you know, they want to be in that starting 15 because, you know, you want to show your worth. You want to prove to the country that you're still the best player in the country. And there's no better way than having sort of youngsters that are pushing you. Yeah. And now you still want to prove to your youngsters, to the youngsters around you, that you're still the best player.
Yeah, it's great. It's all very, very healthy,
man. Yeah.
All right, so after the break, we have got the throwdown. Of course, so what happens when we have the big profile guest on the show, Sandile over here, offers 10 questions, or poses 10 questions.
Poses.
So our corner is going to be in the hot seat for that. Join us after the break for part three.
Yes, as per usual, we always have our throwdown. I promise, Akona, I'm not going to throw you off too much.
Thank you.
But let's start with the most important question. In your prime years, who was faster, you or Otto?
Definitely me.
Oh, definitely?
Yes, and he would tell you as well. If he was here, he would tell you.
I thought that was going to be a little bit, you know, more casual. He was going to say like 50-50.
No, he knows.
I want to understand, you know, having a brother, twin brother at that level of rugby, how deep was the competition, like at home? Or were you guys always chilled about it, or did you guys push each other?
No, we did. And I think, you know, for us, it was a blessing to play at that level for so many games. And it's sort of when things are not going well for you, you know, you got someone that you can speak to and try and understand what you're going through and how to overcome that.
Yeah.
And having someone like my brother, that I can just pick up the phone and say, listen, I'm not getting selected because I just came back from injury. How do you think I should handle this? And he's been through that. So that makes a big difference.
This is not part of my question, but I want to know just in terms of you and
that's
his.
Number three.
No. This okay. always ends up going a bit longer than. What is your favorite moment that you and your brother have shared on the rugby field? Like, you know, because you guys got to play together in your peaks.
Yes.
Is there a moment where you're like, this is super cool? Is there one that you can remember? That wasn't part of my list, sorry.
I think it wasn't. There was a time where we played the Sharks in Durban, and one of my teammates, JP Nell, who was very hard at tackling, and I remember the time where he tackled my brother, and I actually felt sorry for him. And I think purely because I'm the older one, so you always feel some kind of way for your younger brother.
Yeah.
You know, I had a chat with JP. I said, please just take it easy.
Just tackle him.
Yeah, just take it easy on him. But I think, you know, you had to just bring yourself out of it as quickly as possible because it's
competing.
A professional. Yes, yeah.
So. I just want to know right now, who is your current best wing in the world of rugby right now? I know it's tough.
Yes, it's tough. It's
tough because firstly, it's hard pronouncing French people's names. And secondly, we haven't seen some of our best guys maybe playing much recently.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
Got to narrow it.
You know, Cheslin is definitely up there.
Okay.
I think Ketly Arendse has grown as a player. When he came through, you know, he was still a bit, you know, making those soft mistakes, you know, that you don't expect. But now, you know, he's there.
Okay. You know? So our, you know, our focus has been on touring. Who was your best roommate to stay with, and who was the worst person who used to snore, and who was the worst roommate you used to have?
Okay, maybe they won't like me for this. I once shared a room with Katro Steenkamp. It was not pleasant. Sorry, Gatti. Still love you, my brother. And at PSPs, I enjoyed him. You know, as a young. Because we made our Springbok debut together.
Oh, right.
We made our Bulls full-on starting debut together. So we had a lot of commonalities. And I think for him, he had a big head on his shoulders. Very young but mature youngster. And we had some nice chats.
So on the pitch, there's always that one guy who you hate going up against. Who was your toughest individual opponent? And when you saw him coming, you're like, oh my God.
When we... We're playing against the Hurricane, Julian Sevilla. And he was still the boss then.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever we had to go to Wellington, I knew that it was going to be a tough afternoon because he was big. And I think that's the thing with the Maoris. They don't just have big legs and or maybe a big upper body and maybe a legs that you can, you know, give yourself a chance with. They're just strong everywhere. Yeah. They're strong, they're quick. And I always had to make sure that JP or whoever was playing 13,
yeah, listen,
the plan is I'm going to push him to the inside.
Yeah.
So let's just try and find a way to take him down.
Yeah,
and yeah, I know he was a beast.
The team, because you've played in like Super Rugby in its peak, the team you dreaded playing the most?
Crusaders.
Give us why. God, everybody.
Oh, but they were so good in the era.
Like those guys, they were just too good. They didn't have a lot of weaknesses. Mm. And you don't find a lot of teams like that. You know, they didn't have like the huge players like the Blues or the Hurricanes.
Yes.
But they had smart players. They know how to, you know, stop you from... Because we had also a solid pack, you know. We knew that our pack can dominate anyone. And I think that's why we were so successful that those years. But the Crusaders just find ways to either, you know, double hit us and rip the ball. Just do everything they can to just outsmart us. And obviously they had Aaron Major, Dan Carter at 10 and 12. Mm. And going into Christchurch, you knew that if you're not at your best, you're going to get 50. Easy.
You get pumped.
Yeah. So we always try to have them coming to us at Loftus. Then we know that we've got a very good chance. And I think for me, back in the days, the Crusaders were definitely the best team in the world.
So, Akona, you have a legendary rugby career. I don't want to gas you up, but I feel like you do, you know that. Is there an individual moment for you where you're like, this was super special? And, you know, we want to really know which was the one.
Well, 07 was one of the best years for me, going down to Durban and beating the Sharks in 85th minute. Mm. And just the way how that game happened, you know, beating Crusaders in the semifinals, knowing that you have to travel to Durban to play against the Sharks, was special. But I think, you know, winning the World Cup, you know, for your country and...
Same year. That was a good year.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Definitely.
Yeah.
Now you come back, you know, and I think, you know, sometimes as players, you get in the moment, you don't actually think about it, but only when you're retired, then you look back and you realize what you've done. And, you know, landing at Owatambo and you're seeing the airport packed, you know, going to Cape Town, driving through Soweto, going to Durban, going to Cape Town, and Newlands is packed. And there's no game, but just us there walking around with the trophy. That's when you actually realize what you've done for the country and you get to appreciate that. And definitely those are the memories and moments that we'll treasure forever.
That's awesome. I'm going to bring it back to rugby. So your life is on the line and somebody's got to kick for post to save your life. Who are you picking? Past, present, currently? You know, I just want to know what's going on.
I think it's, you know, Monet Steyn is one of the guys I've played with who's solid. Derek Ochard was also very good kicker for post. But I think Henry Pollard for me...
For life.
Is a proper Iceman. I think for him to not be in the squad, now being... And then getting a call from Rassie saying, listen, we need you. Coming there, kicking those kicks in the semis, in the final, in the quarters, just... And I think the most difficult kick was against England. You know, the pressure's there. The weather's bad.
Yep.
And for him to just step up then and then kick it over with ease, I think if my life was on the line, he's the guy I'm going for.
Andre Pollard, that's not a bad place to leave it. The coach that most influenced you in your career, who would you pick? Because you've played with some legendary coaches. Who's the one that really influenced you the most?
I would say Heineke Meyer. He was my coach at the Bulls and we won our first Super Rugby with him. And I think purely because what he also instilled in the team, he tried and make sure that the culture in the team was everything.
Yeah.
You know, you can have the best players, like you said, Man City, but if you can't have a culture in the team, players playing for each other. Yeah. You know, I remember the times we used to mock Western Province because they also had the best players. Mm. But we managed to beat them because we wanted to play for each other. And I don't know, maybe it's Cape Town, you know, there's a lot of distractions.
Sure.
But for us, it was just that, you know, he built a culture in the team. And I think that's why the Bulls is one of the most successful teams in the country.
This is my final one. And I know Ben has been waiting for me to ask this question. If you could do it all again, professional rugby or professional golf?
Golf. Golf.
Nah, you didn't even give it a chance.
I think golf is something else. Like the pressure of being there. And purely because now, and the sport I played, I had teammates around me. Mm-hmm. If I fumble, they're there to pick me up. But golf, you're just there.
That's you.
If you duff your chip, that's you. If you make a bogey, that's you. If you make a birdie, that's you. Yeah. And it just, it challenges you so much. I think you get to grow as a person. Yeah. You play a bad round. And I think, you know, watching golf now, you get to understand the pros and respect them, because pros can shoot easily 66 and easily 86. Mm. But what I like when they say is, you know, that doesn't define who you are. You can go out there and play the best round of your life, or you can play the worst round of your life, but that doesn't change who you are. And I think for me, that is special.
That was crazy. I didn't expect them to go at the same time.
You know, when people ask that question, people always think, oh, you make so much money for golf. But what you've just pointed out confirms what I've always thought. Mm. Golf is such a special thing, and the mastery that you need to be great at that.
Connor, you've just put me in a position where Ben going to go on a golf
range. No, I can't.
And I think Ben, look at the number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler says he's still trying to be the best player he can be. And he's the best player we've seen now.
Yeah.
Golf, is you just don't stop working on it.
And that's what makes it so fun, yeah.
Yeah.
Every single day.
Ben, please.
It's the US Open. It's the US Open this week. I'm excited about that. Yeah. But yeah, Connor, let's wrap it up there. Let's first wrap it up with the polls, obviously, because each week I know that most of you ignore our polls, but they're really great, I promise. If you go on to at TRN on the bounce on our X account, you'll see last week's poll. Wanda, if you can just bring it up there. Who is winning? Obviously, this is this week's big thing. There's so much sport on right now.
Shucks.
Who's winning the ICC World Test Championship final? 5% of you think the Aussies are. We've got a very bullish audience here.
This is crazy that you just said
63 reckon it's going to be Timber and his boys.
Yep.
5% thinks a draw, and 27% of you think the English weather is just going to absolutely cockblock all of us.
Hey, could be.
I mean, if you haven't watched the episode with Josh Margolis from last week where we completely preview this thing from top to bottom, get on it now, because it is a very interesting sporting spectacle, this whole thing.
Yeah.
And yes, I think the Proteas are kind of like the Bulls. They're very much underdogs for this, but they've got players. They've got everything they need to possibly win this thing.
Mm.
So this week we get to watch that.
I was going to say they're more like Arsenal, but anyway, let's keep it going. Be positive. Brand they say.
Be positive. This weekend, we can be super positive, right?
Yeah.
World Test Championship's going to end with a crescendo of Proteas greatness, and the Bulls are going to do it against Leinster. 100%. This week's poll, to get into it, because of the last weekend, we saw something truly, truly spectacular in sports. It was the French Open final with Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz. Sinner had 3 match points in the fourth set. He went to go and lose it to
Carlos.
I mean, watching Carlos play is crazy. He does things that other players can't do.
Yeah.
It's weird. Watching him hit a ball is like watching Chesson score tries against England.
Yeah.
It's just other guys can't do it.
Yeah.
So this week's poll is, what is your favorite of all the tennis grand slams? Is it Wimbledon? Is it the Aussie Open? Is it the French Open, or is it the US Open? Spoiler alert, Aussie Open and US Open are not going to win this poll. I can tell you that much.
100%. It's got to be the French. It's got to be French.
Look,
I'm not going to push you, but you know the answer.
Have your say. I'm predicting Wimbledon, and that's coming up next month. It's hugely exciting. Accorda, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you,
about to go and win the Supersport Shootout.
Thank you.
I mean, let's be positive.
This
is a weekend of sports.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm going to watch all the highlights on Supersport.
Thank you.
And if you don't, then we must have a game as well.
Yes.
The last time we played was, 4 or 5 years at Soweto?
Soweto Country Club, yes. Yeah.
Long day, a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was about 5 years. But let's do some golf.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, most importantly, let's do some rugby this weekend. And in the next couple of weeks, we've got huge rugby shows coming up because we have to break down the whole Springbok season, of course. Then we've got a British and Irish Lions preview show happening with John Robbie.
Oof.
Yeah, John Robbie is still as passionate as you can imagine he is. So he'll be on the hot seat here, and we're going to talk rugby, because football is taking a gap.
Yeah, we are, unfortunately. But we'll be back. We'll be back.
I heard Arsenal signed a new
keeper. Let's get over this. This is the end of the show, guys. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, everybody.